From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, education advocates rally at the Capitol for more education funding. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the Chris Christie New Jersey Bridgegate scandal and how it connects to New York. And the state's 21st District Congressman Bill Owens announces his retirement. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. School children, parents, and union members held a rally and sit-in at the state capitol this week to build momentum for more spending on schools in the state budget. Our capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt, was there and filed this report.
Save our schools! Save our schools!
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver was the highest-ranking lawmaker to speak to the crowd. He jumped right in on an issue that might prove controversial, expanding access to pre-kindergarten to all children in New York. Silver, who first advocated for universal pre-K several years ago, is a backer of New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's plan to provide full access to pre-K.
Building on the momentum created by Mayor Bill de Blasio, we need to take the universal pre-K program we created, bolster it, expand it, and make it sustainable for future generations.
But there's a growing disagreement over how to pay for pre-K. Mayor de Blasio would like to raise taxes on the wealthy, and he's seeking permission from the legislature to impose the taxes. Governor Cuomo, who is focused on cutting taxes this year, wants the state to come up with the money for pre-K another way. Speaker Silver, a strong ally of de Blasio, who also needs to work with Cuomo, is trying to stay out of the argument for now. He says he'll wait and see the governor's budget proposal first to look at the details of how Cuomo proposes paying for pre-K.
The governor claims he can do it.
But Silver says he thinks overall school aid should be increased, especially for poorer schools in urban and suburban districts.
Our goal is to get as much money as we can, and you know, in a year that we hear there's money available into the classroom, I think we've lagged behind. We made cuts in prior years when money wasn't there. So I think now we should make up for some of those cuts.
A couple hundred of the students held a brief sit-in outside Governor Cuomo's offices, where they heard from students whose schools have been affected by spending cuts in recent years. Trinh Truong is from Utica, where she attends the public high school. She says recent cuts at her school include sports teams and college counselors. She says she and her fellow students were forced to hold a fundraiser in order to buy materials they needed for their chemistry lab.
This disparity between schools like mine and schools that are glowing ivory towers is unconstitutional. Students should not have the responsibility of selling coupon books to fund their science project.
Overall, the groups are seeking $1.9 billion more dollars for schools. Governor Cuomo has said he wants to increase spending on education by as much as 4 to 5% from last year. But Cuomo also wants to begin a $2.2 billion tax cutting program to reduce business and property taxes. One of the organizers of the event, Billy Easton of the Alliance for Quality Education, says the governor and the legislature should not sacrifice school aid in favor of tax cuts.
In our mind, there's no question that it's more important that we fund our schools than we provide another tax cut that is primarily targeted to wealthy and corporations.
Cuomo will outline his budget on January 21st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, a big scandal has erupted over in New Jersey with Governor Chris Christie, but it is connected to New York and the Port Authority, and there are even questions, Alan, being asked about what Governor Cuomo knew as far as what's happened with the lane closures on the George Washington Bridge.
The way that it all comes down is that the Port Authority has people from both states. The way that it's always worked is that the governors of each state appoint the top people. One appoints the chair, the other appoints the executive director, and each of them have bureaucracies, and it has been a place, particularly in New Jersey, where political patronage rules. You put your closest people, they may have no expertise at all. So now down comes the great Christie affair, and, when did Christie know about it? We'll know about that soon enough as the subpoenas go out and as people are offered immunity if they testify. In the meantime, the newspapers are laying off. It's as if, all of a sudden somebody threw a wet blanket over the whole thing. Cuomo's people came out when they learned about the closings. At least this is what we've been told. And their people tried like crazy to get this stupidity on the other side of the bridge in Fort Lee stopped. And there ensued a war between the two states. What really went on during that time has been very unclear. And such august newspapers as the New York Times and others have been raising some of these questions. And the Cuomo people are saying it happened on the other side of the bridge. The political people now, and this isn't really our concern, but of course it is your concern, because if you get a mess on one side, you're getting a mess on the other side also, and there are questions to be answered here. Right now, based on what we know, the smell test is pretty good for Cuomo. They have stayed out of it. They have to deal with the Christie administration. There's no good reason to weigh in and alienate a group of people, the Christie people, who clearly take no prisoners and who get angry and who get revenge. And that's what this whole case, is all about. So at very best, Cuomo is playing it right and saying everybody shut up for now because the spotlight is over there. Why should we encourage it over here? Unless, of course, there's something we don't know.
Huge rally at the state capitol this week, Alan, for people advocating for education, including Billy Easton, the executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education in New York. And you sat down with him the day after the rally to talk about all the issues in education that are going on in New York.
Hey, David, Bill de Blasio becomes the new mayor, and we know he's A, has friends, a lot of friends in high places in the unions, and B, that the unions don't like charter schools, and that he has made all kinds of noises about making sure that the charter schools pay their fair share and pay rent on buildings that the Bloomberg administration was making sure that they got for free. And while charter schools are just a tiny, small part of the way that its education is done in New York, there is a real possibility that they are going to face real hard times and that the worm has turned, basically, when it comes to governmental support for charter schools. But the de Blasio position is, look, if you're going to do it for everybody. Make sure that all the schools are fairly treated. Make sure that the money goes where it needs to go. He has Carmen Farina come in as the new educational czar, and she certainly is very different from Bloomberg and his guru on this, who is Joel Klein, who went to work for Murdoch, of all people, eventually. So I'm simply saying that when you see the teachers union emboldened to the point that 1,500 people show up for a rally in the Capitol to demand more money. How much more money? $2 billion for education. That's a very interesting figure because the Cuomo people have come up with an extra $2 billion in the state budget that they want to use to cut people's taxes, including the taxes of the very rich. Meantime, you have de Blasio in New York saying, tax the very rich. And Cuomo, who is known to think about things in terms of what the next move is, must be somewhat perplexed about what he's going to do with de Blasio. First, he offered him pre-K, and he said, okay, you want pre-K, we'll give you pre-K, but we'll pay for it, we'll find the money. And de Blasio comes back and says, nope, I want to tax the rich in New York City. when you say if you're taxing everybody over $500,000, most people don't have $500,000, but the people who do aren't going to like it. So I think the de Blasio-Cuomo relationship is still in flux, and we have to watch it really carefully. You know, I was thinking about this the other day when he gave the State of the State address. When C-SPAN does the television cameras and the State of the Union address, when the president talks, if somebody's mentioned or if something which is close to some particular person is mentioned, they'll put the cameras on them. But in the Cuomo State of the State, in which he got out of the assembly chamber and into a place that he controlled, when the words pre-K came up, you would think that Bill de Blasio was sitting there. They would put the camera on him. Nothing doing. There'll be some kind of a Cuomo chart or something like that up there. So this Cuomo-de Blasio relationship certainly bears watching.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. The abrupt announcement this week that Congressman Bill Owens will retire from his seat in Congress means the sprawling 21st District is an open race. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The 21st Congressional District is one of the largest east of the Mississippi. It spans more than 16,000 square miles of northern New York, encompassing all or part of 12 counties. And now, after 5 years, the district's sole congressman has announced he will not run for re-election. Bill Owens was first elected in 2009 in a special election, becoming the first Democrat to take the seat since the Civil War. He won subsequent elections by narrow margins. Three Republicans, Elise Stefanik, Joe Gilbert, and Michael Ring, announced their candidacies last year. Essex County Republican Committee Chair Ron Jackson notes that the primary is in late June, and candidates must begin circulating primary petitions in early March. Jackson says the committee has been vetting candidates since last summer, and more than half of the counties have already endorsed a candidate.
After tonight, half the counties will have already endorsed. So it's kind of late in the process. I'm not saying people won't get in, and people can run without being endorsed. Somebody who really wants to work hard could get in for a primary, but as far as the endorsement process, it's pretty late. Not impossibly late, but it's pretty late for somebody to get in.
The retirement of the incumbent may upset that apple cart, according to director of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School and professor of political science, Grant Reher.
Having an open seat may change some of the dynamics for the Republican Party and for other people that hadn't come forward before. So I don't know whether that process is effectively closed, whether there isn't the ability for another potential candidate, perhaps with some name recognition and some resources, to come in and say, no, I'd like to take a shot at this now. So I think the fact that it's an open seat changes the dynamic potentially in some way, not knowing their internal workings at this point.
GOP State Senator Betty Little believes having the open seat will motivate more Republicans to consider a run, and she may step forward.
My focus is on the Senate. I've already said that I'm running for the Senate again this year. We did a lot of things last year that I thought were important to the North Country, and I certainly would like to continue and have a good year in the Senate again this year. It's not to say that I have closed any doors. You know, several years ago, I did try to run for a seat, but, you know, we'll see. I'd like to see where the committees go with this, and it's just so important to pick the candidate that can win the seat.
Democrats were caught off guard by Congressman Owens' announcement and now must find a candidate. Shortly after hearing the news, Clinton County Democratic Chair Marty Mannix expected numerous Democrats to be interested in running.
People who want to see change, people who want things to be accomplished, are drawn to the Democratic Party. And so I think we're going to find that we will have candidates.
The race will once again be scrutinized at a national level, and SUNY Plattsburgh Professor of Political Science Tom Conda expects a flurry of political activity.
The Democrats, of course, want to hold on to all the seats they can, and this one becomes more vulnerable without an incumbent to run in it. But as there's no obvious person out there in either party less than a year before the election, I expect that any number of people may try to throw their hats in the ring and see if they can make any headway. And I anticipate that both parties will put a fair amount of money and effort into the district because there are so few seriously competitive districts out there.
The Green Party's Donald Hassig announced his candidacy for the seat last year. Other possible candidates being floated include ex-Democratic Congressman Scott Murphy, who represented the adjacent district, and Didi Scazzafava, the former Republican Assemblywoman who faced Owens in a three-way race before endorsing him in the closing days of the 2009 special election.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Consumer confidence fell again throughout New York in the fourth quarter. As the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports, new data from the Siena Research Institute shows this is the second consecutive quarter confidence fell in 8 of the 9 metro areas that were measured.
Don Levy is the director of the Siena College Research Institute. According to him, consumers are not starting 2014 on a hopeful note in New York. Don, what's happened?
Specifically, what we're looking at this quarter is that all across the state of New York, we saw a slippage. We saw a decline in consumer sentiment over the fourth quarter. At the same time, we like to, at this point, as we turn the new year, to look at where do we stand today versus a year ago. And I think that's even more sobering. What we see is that in each of the 9 areas of the state that we look at, sentiment is down, and in some places down appreciably from where it was last year.
I see consumers in the greater Albany area seem to be losing faith.
In Albany specifically, we're down about 7% from where we were a year ago. Now, a year ago in Albany, we were hovering just at or slightly above the break-even point where optimism and pessimism meet. Right now, we've seen a decline. We've dropped by about 5 points from a year ago. And then even looking a little bit more closely, what we see is that the current sentiment, how do you feel about your life today, is at or slightly above where it was last year. The precipitous decline is in how we here in the Capital Region feel towards the future. There we've dropped 10 points. It was a year, 2013, that didn't quite live up to our expectations. We thought there was going to be improvement, and we just haven't seen it. We're not panicked about our financial situation, but we're less hopeful about the future.
Why is that?
We just haven't seen the type of increase in our income while our expenses continue to go up. One big concern that we hear about is health care. While many of us don't know exactly what Obamacare is going to do, one thing that Capital Region residents are telling us is that they're sure that their costs are going to go up. So if my income is not increasing and my health care costs, my food costs are increasing, then I feel as though I have fewer dollars in my pocket. And that's made Capital Region residents feel less optimistic about the future. Only 20% feel they're better off today than they were a year ago, and actually fewer think that they're going to be better off a year from today.
What needs to happen to reverse this trend?
We need not only job growth, but we need to see those incomes increase for those people who have jobs in order for consumers to start to feel better.
Are there any bright spots?
Home buying. All across the state, we're seeing that the intent to purchase homes is up from where it has been. Right now, nearly 5% of the folks we spoke to in the Capital Region say they're taking a look at making a home acquisition over the next six months. If indeed we continue to see that type of activity in the home buying market, that's going to be a boost to the entire economy because people will be going out to buy furniture, electronics items. So we're looking for a little bit of movement in the real estate market.
The only improved sentiment in New York State was on Long Island, which increased slightly. The Siena survey was conducted by random telephone calls to adults over the age of 18. The New York City and Long Island Index are based on an average of SRI's monthly consumer sentiment surveys. Each of the other metro area indexes is based on over 400 respondents.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Southern Tier is guaranteed one out of the four casinos to be built in upstate New York. The licenses are expected sometime this year, and the competition for the Southern Tier Casino is starting to heat up. The Innovation Trail's Matt Martin reports that there are now four locations looking to apply.
Jeff Grawl is owner of Tioga Downs, where ground was recently broken on an expanded parking garage. Grawl's plan is to offer the full casino experience at his racetrack and electronic gambling site, but first he needs to win one of the new gaming licenses. The Manhattan-based businessman says he spent $400,000 to help pass Proposition 1 in November. He was hoping it was going to be an easy stroll to get the casino permit.
You know, I've already invested a ton of money. I took a big risk, and to be honest, I think we deserve the license.
But not everyone in the region agrees. At least three other businesses have shown interest in securing the casino license. In Broome County, the Vista Hospitality Group has proposed to build a casino in the heart of downtown Binghamton. Vista owns the downtown Holiday Inn, but hasn't specified the exact location for their casino. The Walsh family, owners of Traditions in Johnson City, has also announced plans to apply. And there will probably only be one winner. A total of four licenses will be awarded to the upstate area. Three will go to a single applicant in each of the three designated regions, including the Southern Tier. And the fourth can be placed anywhere. But most agree it will go to the Catskill region because of its proximity to New York City. Grawl thinks it would be a mistake to put a casino in Broome County, so close to his location in Tioga County.
There's only 600,000 people that live here, and that's just not enough to have two casinos. Why would anybody think it's a good idea to put a casino 25 miles from me?
The Walsh family hired a local marketing firm to study the impact of a casino in Johnson City. Matt Walsh cites the private study when claiming that the new casino would actually be good for Grawl's business. The gambling legislation lowers the tax rate on existing racinos, like Tioga Downs, so they can compete with the new casinos.
His tax rate will go down, and the studies show that what he will net will be actually better than what he's doing right now.
Recently, another group threw its hat into the ring. Thomas Wilmot is based in Rochester and owns malls around the state. Wilmot has proposed a $350 million casino in Seneca County. His plan is to market the casino to wine country tourists. Wilmot says the central location between Rochester and Syracuse will increase its draw. Grawl recognizes that a casino built 70 miles north of Tioga Downs won't draw much from the Southern Tier. But Grawl says it could hurt gaming sites already in business in the Finger Lakes. There's already the Turning Stone Resort in Verona and the Finger Lakes Gaming and Racetrack in Farmington nearby.
But all his customers would come from existing facilities. So what's the point? I mean, we're just moving people around.
The New York State Gambling Commission will select a 5-member board to award the licenses. Grawl thinks the Southern Tier could use the economic jumpstart of a casino more than the Finger Lakes.
I would hope that they recognize that between Binghamton, Tioga, Elmira, Cortland, that there's a real need for economic development and not ignore that fact.
The state has said no casino will be built without local support. But what qualifies as local support isn't entirely clear at this point. The License Review Board will make that decision. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Martin for WSKG. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Martin for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1403 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. We'll be right back.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.